Well, it was on Christmas morning, just exactly a year ago, that we gathered in my mom's living room just outside of Chicago. It was me and Erica and the kids and my brother and sister and all my nieces and nephews. And it didn't take long for every single piece of the wrapping paper and every single gift to be ripped into like 1,000 tiny shards of colored paper. I trust that you guys have kind of seen how this all unfolds here. And once all the gifts were open, my wife Erica and I, we were hoping to sit back and to soak up all the joy that is kids and their new toys on Christmas morning. But instead of soaking up all the joy, we were soaking up the tears of both of our kids who were literally sobbing because their gifts weren't as big and weren't as many as their cousins. Hashtag Christmas fail. Right there, that morning. Okay, now we actually, Erica and I, we do our best. We're quite intentional to not make Christmas all about the presents. And there are moments where I feel like, man, our kids are really tracking with this. But as you can see, it's not maybe working out all that well for us. But still, that there is something discouraging, right? That there's actually nothing maybe more discouraging as parents than learning that the few thoughtful gifts that you bought for your kids are not what they wanted, that they didn't get what they were hoping for. And I wish I could, you know, tell you that this is one of those kids that, you know, or one of these stories that my kids have long forgotten, like, thing of the past, they don't remember this whole deal. But that's not quite how things work with my daughter, Lucy, right? She has a mind and a memory like a trap. And so she'll often remind us, hey, Mom, Dad, remember last Christmas when all our cousins got way more presents than us? And before she even finished the sentence, Eric and I were like, yes, we remember. It's the worst morning of our lives, right? Eric will actually tell you, like, she was heartbroken watching this whole thing unfold. We're going, thank you for reminding us, Lucy. Okay? Now, here's the deal. Christmas really can be the most wonderful time of the year, but let's just be honest. Sometimes it can be kind of a disappointing time of year too, can it, right? As much as we all know that Christmas is not about the presents, and I know that we all know that, still it can be disappointing a little bit, if we're being honest. It can be disappointing when we don't get what we were hoping for. And I think the same can be true in the lives that you and I are living, right? Oftentimes Christmas, for us, it marks another year in our life when we didn't get what we wanted in life, or we didn't get what we were hoping for in life, right? Christmas marks just another year when we didn't get the job that we wanted, or we didn't get accepted into the school that we applied for. We didn't make the team that we tried out for. We didn't get pregnant like we were praying for. We didn't get the answer that we had been asking for. We didn't close on that house that we put the offer on, and maybe we didn't get the proposal for the wedding that we had been dreaming of. Now, I know that these don't describe every single situation that every one of us is in, but I think that you see what I'm getting at, that oftentimes Christmas marks time in our life in a way that reminds us of some of the things that we wanted most that we didn't quite get yet. And I think you know very well what it is that you have been hoping for most this year in your life or in your family or in your marriage or in the place that you work. And so what I want to do today in the fourth week of our series, It's Worth Repeating, is I want to take a brand new look, not necessarily this week at the same old Christmas story per se that we've been looking at, but I want to take a brand new look at a passage from the Bible that is often referred to. It's often read during the Christmas season, and I want to read it today for us to see if I can't help us to learn how to understand the moments in life when we don't get what we wanted when we wanted it, when we didn't get what we were hoping for when we were hoping for it. And that passage from the Bible comes from Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. And it's a guy named Paul writing to a church in the city of Galatia. And this one little section of his letter, it's often referred to and it's often read every Christmas because in a way, it just gives us a short, little, tiny summary of the Christmas story. Take a look at what it says. It says this, that God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. Why? Why would he do this, right? God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children, right? That's the story of Christmas in just two sentences. right? Before Jesus, this is how things worked, right? People were judged and people were evaluated according to how well they obeyed God's law and measured up to God's law. The problem is we would never be good enough. We would never be good enough to live up to that standard. To put it very bluntly, we were screwed. But God sent his son to this earth to be subject to the law in our place so that we wouldn't receive the punishment that we deserved when we inevitably could not and would not measure up to the law. So that's the good news. That's what Paul is summarizing here. That's the good news. But that in and of itself is not totally what I want to highlight this morning. What I want to pay closer attention to is the six words. It's the six words that Paul uses to set up that short summary of Christmas, because here's how that summary actually begins. Paul writes this: But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law, to buy our freedom so that we could be his very own. When the right time came, God sent his son. When the right time came. That seems a little strange to me. I wonder if it seems a little strange to you. When the right time came, God sent his son. When I first read this, I'm a little bit thinking to myself, how could there be a wrong time for God to send, you know, his son to save all the people from their sins? How could there be a wrong time for that? It's such an interesting statement that I felt like, man, I think this deserves a closer look. Right? And what you realize is, man, those six seemingly simple, insignificant words are maybe loaded with so much more meaning than we think they are. When the right time came, I think is actually saying so much more than we think it is. Some translations say when the fullness of time came, or one says when the set time had fully come, God sent his son. And so the question is, what does that really mean? When the right time came, when the fullness of time, you know, came, when the set time had come, what possibly could this be referring to? How could there be a wrong time for this? And maybe more specifically, what about this time made this the right time for God to send his son? To understand a little bit of that, I thought maybe it would be helpful to look a little bit at the landscape of the first century world. What was happening then? What was happening before and during and after this time in the first century world? And so we'll take a look back. Right, for starters, God's people, just in general, God's people had long, for generations, God's people had been promised a savior. Right, a Messiah, someone who would reclaim the throne of their ancestor, King David, right? That they were promised that someone would come rescue them from the harsh oppression that they had experienced, right? And they're experiencing now by the harsh Roman rule, okay? And so their hope at this time, their hope and their expectation for a Messiah, for a savior, for this king was at its highest. It was at its highest. Because at this point, it had actually been 400 years since the last prophecy about this Messiah. Prophecies were just predictions about God's intended future, right? Spoken by God's chosen messengers who were called prophets. And it had been a while since anybody had heard anything. It had actually been 400 years of radio silence. When we have good news that we want to tell our kids, right? We're going on vacation, or we're going to grandma's house in Chicago. Sometimes we have to wait to tell them the good news until the moment is a little bit closer, right? Otherwise, it's all they can think about. They're consumed. It's all they can talk about. It's all they can ask questions about. And so try to imagine this. Try to imagine generation after generation after generation, right? Your great, great, great grandkids, great, 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 great grandkids still waiting for the good news that they had been promised. That's the scenario at the very time when God finally decided to send his son. Desperation and hope and expectation we're nearing the pinnacle, the highest point. And so maybe it's possible that that's one reason why this window might have been the right time. Expectation and hope and anticipation was at its fullest. Okay, but there's more to explore. On top of that, dissatisfaction at this time, dissatisfaction with other gods and with other false idols was on the rise, right? Dissatisfaction with the gods of Rome and in Greece was starting to become a little more prevalent, right? These idols and these gods that people turned to and that people worshiped and that people put their hope and people put their trust in, gold statues and, you know, all these things. And all these idols and all these false gods had failed to do anything for God's people. They certainly failed to give them victory over their Roman oppressors like they thought they would, right? Even more so, all the philosophical and all the scientific influence of more cultured cities like Greece was actually, you know, starting to leave people feeling a little spiritually empty, okay? And so there was a growing sense that there was, you know, a longing for something more. There was a growing sense that maybe there was something more than what people had been experiencing. And maybe this had something to do with the fact that this time was the right time. Or maybe it had to do with some of the historical shifts, some of the historical moments that were happening. At the beginning of this 400-year window of silence that I talked about, there was a Greek king named Alexander the Great. Okay, some of you know your history, right? Greek king named Alexander the Great. And his conquests into the ancient world, they actually started to bring a common culture and a common language throughout the ancient world. Common language, common trading language, common communication throughout the ancient world. And that common language was actually Koine Greek. And that would be the eventual language that the New Testament would be written in, Koine Greek. That's why sometimes here on Sunday mornings, I take time to tell you about the words in their original language of Koine Greek. It's not because I'm a geek. I mean, that could be part of it. I don't know. But right, I don't tell you this stuff because I'm a geek. I tell you this stuff because it was written in Koine Greek. And Alexander the Great had a part in all of that. Moreover, just prior to Jesus' birth was the beginning of a time period known as Pax Romana, which means Roman peace. And this was a window of time when Rome, I mean, Rome had done a lot of bad things, but this was a time when Rome had actually unified much of the world, the ancient world, under its government. And so there was some sense of unity, and there was some sense of peace throughout the various parts of the world, and that meant that travel was actually much easier than it had ever been. To cross into other parts, into other countries, and to cross borders into new places. And when travel was easier, it all of a sudden became far easier for Christians to spread the good news of Jesus, who had come into this world. It became far easier for Christians to spread the good news of Jesus across borders into places in the ancient world that it had never been before, and into places that previously it would have been impossible to travel. And now, because of Koine Greek, they could spread the news in a language that more people understood. So this was just a slice of what was happening in the world right before, right during, and right after Jesus was sent into this world, born of a woman, subject to the law, and so on, right? This was the window in history when this all went down. Now, I can't guarantee that God was tracking with any of this stuff specifically. I mean, I don't know 100% that these were the exact chess pieces that God was waiting to be moved before he sent his rescue mission into motion. But when I think about what Paul writes to the church in Galatia, that God sent his son when the right time came, it's hard for me to think that some of this wasn't significant to that moment in time. And if so, then here's what I think that we can take away from this, especially for any of us who are wanting something so badly in our life right now and hoping for something so badly in our life right now that maybe we have not gotten yet. Here's what this says to me, that it's possible that there is a wrong time for the right thing. That maybe, just maybe, it's possible that there is a wrong time for us to receive the right thing. Perhaps God had a sense that if he sent his son any earlier, I don't know, maybe God knew that if he sent his son any earlier than he did, the fullness of people's dissatisfaction with false gods and idols, maybe the fullness of their dissatisfaction wouldn't be as high. Maybe people are going, I don't know, this golden statue's still doing okay. Maybe their hearts wouldn't be truly ready to turn and to embrace the Savior of the world that they had been promised. Maybe they wouldn't have eyes to see or you know, to be able to understand that this was the time. Perhaps he knew the fullness of people's anticipation for something greater wouldn't have been as great. Maybe he knew the time was right now for it to be easier to communicate the good news of Jesus Christ to more people in more parts of the world in a common language that more people would understand. Maybe God knew best when people needed the thing they thought they needed the most. And maybe God knows the same thing for you and me. Maybe God knows best when we need the one thing that we think we need the most and that we think we need right now, this year. Need it, gotta have it. Maybe God knows best when we need the one thing that we think we need the most. Maybe there is a wrong time to receive the right thing in our lives. Just as I was typing these words this week and kind of putting these thoughts together, all of a sudden I realized where in my life that maybe I needed to hear that message the most, that maybe there's a wrong time for the right thing. I realized where I needed to hear that message, and truthfully, it's right here at Midcurrent. See, I started this church wanting so badly, for everyone who did not know Jesus to meet Jesus, maybe here in this place. I wanted this place to be full of people who didn't go to church or who walked away from church or, you know, didn't really know a lot about church or just who hadn't really found a church that helped them to see Jesus, right? I wanted this place to be full of people like that. And the reality is, folks, that the St. Croix Valley is full of people who do not go to church and who do not have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Your neighborhood and my neighborhood and neighborhoods all across this world are full of people who don't go to church and who don't know Jesus. And I may be a little partial, but I think we got a pretty good thing going on here. And I want as many people as possible to come and to experience it all so that they might come and experience a God who loves them. I want them to see that we're real people with real hearts for God. I want dudes out there to see that Brian and I, we're real dudes, right? Who look like you and talk like you and watch sports like you that have real hearts for God. And I think that across the board, we've all done a pretty good job at that. And so sometimes I find myself looking at God going, come on, God. Why isn't every single person in Western Wisconsin who's not normally in church sitting in church here with us on Sunday morning? Why aren't people busting down the doors to get in this place? Okay, now I might be exaggerating slightly here. I know that not every single person who doesn't go to church is going to come to church here, right? But there is a part of that thinking that is still very real. Oftentimes I'm asking, God, why aren't there more people? Because I know there are people who need to know Jesus. So why aren't they coming here? Now, to be clear, I've often said around here that I don't have a size goal for church, just in case you're wondering. I don't have a size goal, but as long as there are people that we know in our lives that do not know Jesus, we're not big enough, right? Don't have a size goal, but as long as there are people in our hallways and conference rooms and neighborhoods that do not know Jesus, then we're not big enough, okay? So sometimes I find myself going, come on, God, why aren't there more people here? But that's just kind of big picture thinking. I could zoom this in to some specific people in my life who I can't help but think, man, this would be so right if they were here, right? For instance, we have some neighbors who first learned that I was a pastor when our giant trailer full of gear was you know, parked out in my driveway, right? And one day they asked, like, hey, what's in there? And I said, well, that's funny, you should ask. I'll tell you what's in there. Okay, and so over the years, we developed a little relationship, and they're great. We have so much fun talking at the end of the driveway, and it's really good. And at one point, they even told me that I'm nothing like they thought a pastor would be, which I think I took as a compliment, okay? And then even later down the line, they'd express their interest in coming to church, saying, yeah, you know, they come from different backgrounds, and they've told me, you know what, Sten, I think we'd like to. Right? I think we'd like to come. I think we'd like to bring the boys. And on three or four different occasions, they looked me in the eye and they said, Sten, we'll be there. We'll see you in the morning. And I'd wake up those mornings like it was Christmas morning, like, oh, this is going to be great. And they didn't come. They looked me in the eye. Sten, tomorrow morning, we'll be there. We'll see you there. And they didn't come. And I'm going, why not? Why would they not come? Okay, and so whether it's with the many, God, why isn't every person in the world coming here? Or whether it's just with the few, it's hard for me to not get impatient. It's like, come on, God, this would be such a good thing. That this would be, you know, this would be just the right thing if they were here right now. Why is that not happening? And so I've had to tell myself, you know what, Sten? Maybe it could be the wrong time for the right thing. The truth is, folks, if the masses showed up, every person that I dream about that came, you know, knocking on our door, if they all came right at once, right now, next week, I don't know, we might not be ready for them, right? I'm the only full-time staff member here. The only other person that's officially on staff is Brian, and we, you know, he's like 10 to 12 hours a week doing all the music, and half of that is here, right? Everyone else who helps us organize and lead ministry around here is just a volunteer on top of their full-time job and their full-time life. If all of Western Wisconsin, right, when I say, God, come on, just send every, if all of Western Wisconsin showed up here one day, we could easily be overwhelmed with people. We wouldn't know what to do with them. We wouldn't know how to connect with them. We wouldn't know how to direct them, right? We could be overrun by kids who are already surging to take over control of this place as we speak. They're plodding downstairs every Sunday, the masses of them. What if there was a wrong time for the right thing? What if there was a wrong time for the right thing with my neighbors? What if they came the first time that I invited them, but they weren't really ready to hear? They weren't ready to receive. What if they weren't ready to respond, right? As a brand new church plant a couple years ago, what if they came 2 years ago and it was their first time in church ever and they're nervous and they don't know what to expect? And what if there were some things that we were still working out as a new church plant? And they didn't have the greatest experience. And they went, well, this is a little different than we were expecting. And what if they never came back? And never had the chance to hear about and to meet this person named Jesus who was sent to this world for them. Now, I'm not saying that God can't work in those circumstances. God can do miracles whether we are ready or not. But either way, here's what I have to remind myself to do in those moments. And here's what maybe I just want to remind you of. And here's what I want to suggest that you would do as well for whatever it is that you might be hoping for in your life right now. Just do the next right thing until the right time comes. Okay. If now is the wrong time for you to receive the right thing, the one thing that you needed, the one thing that you wanted, then just do the next right thing until the right time comes. Okay. When it comes to our hopes and dreams here at Midcurrent, I'm just going to keep doing the next right thing. in our effort to be the place where real everyday people and a real God meet. We're just going to keep creating worship experiences that are designed to help real everyday people connect to the heart of God who loves them, who loves us. We're just going to keep doing the next right thing and keep working hard to try to figure out what our kids need and what teenagers in this community need and what you need to take another step in a relationship with Jesus or another step into this community that's forming here at this church. Our task is huge. Our goals are many. My dreams are big, but we're just going to keep doing the next right thing until the right time comes for everything that God has planned for us. So when it comes to the things that you want most in life right now, that you were hoping for most this year, but you don't have yet, I want to encourage you to do the very same thing. Now, I know that might not be the greatest feel-good message, but I wonder if it's possible for you that it's just the wrong time for you to receive the right thing in your life, right? The good news, if that's the case, if now is the wrong time for you to receive the right thing in your life, the good news is not now. With God, it doesn't mean not ever. Not now doesn't mean not ever. And you can make the most of the time in between. Okay, so if you were hoping to be engaged or to be in a really serious relationship at this time in your life, but you're not, right? Don't throw in the towel, okay? Don't give up. You might not be fully aware of it in every part of your life, but maybe you're not as ready as you think you are. Maybe you haven't reached the fullness of your dependence on Jesus first in your life. So just do the next right thing until the right time comes. Spend this time now preparing your heart and preparing yourself for this kind of relationship and commitment. Work now on becoming the person that your future spouse would want you to be. Work now on becoming the godly spouse that God would want you to be in that kind of relationship. If you were hoping to make the A-team, be on the starting roster, but instead you're starting the season on the bench. You're starting the season on the B team or the C team or the D team. I don't know how far they go down this year. Don't give up, right? Just do the next right thing until the right time comes. Work hard on your skills and your attitude and your teamwork, right? So that when the right time comes, you'll be ready for the opportunity that God brings your way. It might just be the wrong time for the right thing for you, but not now doesn't mean not ever. Okay, if you were hoping by this time this year, you'd finally be at the next stage in your career, you'd be at the next level of your company, but you're not. Just do the next right thing until the right time comes. Walk through the next open door. Say yes to the next conversation. Say yes to the next introduction or the next learning opportunity. Do the next right thing for your company or for your business or for your team or for your coworkers, right? Spend your time now being the best coworker that they've ever had or being the best team member that they've ever worked with. Do the next right thing until God brings the right time for you. And I believe he's going to bless that opportunity. If you were hoping that God would give you some kind of answer that you've been asking for this year, if you were hoping that this year God would finally bring some of the relief that you had been praying for, but it hasn't happened just yet, just remember, it is possible that there is a wrong time to receive the right thing. Maybe you're not quite ready for the answer yet. Maybe you're not really ready to respond if God really granted you that one wish or that one prayer. Maybe you're not ready for it. The good news is not now doesn't mean not ever. So just do the next right thing. Take the next right step in your life and in your faith until the right time comes. I don't know what it is for you this morning. I don't know what it is for you this year, but here's what I do know, that God's timing is perfect. He's never a moment too early, and he's never an instant too late. And when the right time comes, God does some of his greatest miracles and does some of his finest work in our lives. And sometimes it happens when we least expect it. So let's do our best at all times to be as ready as we can be for the moments when God would show up in our lives. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks once again for this great gift that you sent into this world for us. And God, if I'm understanding this all correctly, it seems like you had a plan. Seems like you knew what you were doing. And when the right time came, you sent your son into this world as the gift, the thing that this world and that we needed most. God, I just know that some of us here this morning are waiting on something or hoping for something, some kind of gift or some kind of, you know, sign or some kind of opportunity or some kind of answered prayer or somehow for the clouds to break, for the light to come. God, and those can be hard moments to walk in the middle of. And first of all, God, for anybody walking in darkness, God, for anybody, you know, waiting and wondering where you are, God, I pray that this Christmas you would remind us that you are with us in those very places that we walk and that we feel like we're all alone. But then too, God, I pray that you would just plant a little seed of hope in all of our hearts and in all of our lives, that maybe our time is still to come, that maybe you've got something planned for us that you don't want us to miss. And so, God, when the right time comes, I pray that you would give us eyes and ears and hearts to see and to know and to respond to you when you show up in our world and in our lives. We thank you for the good news of your son, Jesus Christ, who came to us this Christmas. God, would you help us to be ready to receive him in the parts of our life and of our world every day. We pray these things in your name. Amen.